I drove north. It's a blur now, as it was then, and all I remember is a sense of high velocity and the feel of the steering wheel in my hands. I was riding on adrenaline, a giddy feeling in a way, except there was the dreamy edge of impossibility to it. Like running a dead-end maze, no way out. It couldn't come to a happy conclusion, and yet I was doing it anyway because it was all I could think of to do. It was pure flight, fast and mindless. I had no plan. Just hit the border at high speed and crash through and keep on running. Near dusk, I passed through Bemidji, then turned northeast toward International Falls. I spent the night in the car behind a closed-down gas station a half mile from the border. In the morning, after gassing up, I headed straight west along the Rainy River, which separates Minnesota from Canada, and which for me separated one life from another. The land was mostly wilderness. Here and there I passed a motel or bait shop, but otherwise the country unfolded in great sweeps of pine and birch and sumac. Though it was still August, the air already had the smell of October, football season. Piles of yellow-red leaves, everything crisp and clean. I remember a huge blue sky. Off to my right was the Rainy River, wide as a lake in places, and beyond the Rainy River was Canada. For a while I just drove, not aiming at anything. Then in the late morning, I began looking for a place to lie low for a day or two. I was exhausted and scared sick. And around noon, I pulled into an old fishing resort called the Tip Top Lodge. Actually, it wasn't a lodge at all, just 8 or 9 tiny yellow cabins clustered on a peninsula that jutted northward into the Rainy River. The place was in sorry shape. There was a dangerous wooden dock, an old minnow tank, a flimsy tar-paper boathouse along the shore. The main building, which stood in a cluster of pines on high ground, seemed to lean heavily to one side, like a cripple, the roof sagging toward Canada. Briefly, I thought about turning around, just giving up. But then I got out of the car and walked up to the front porch. The man who opened the door that day is the hero of my life. How do I say this without sounding sappy? Blurted out. The man saved me. He offered exactly what I needed, without questions, without any words at all. He took me in. He was there at the critical time, a silent, watchful presence. 6 days later, when it ended, I was unable to find a proper way to thank him, and I never have. And so, if nothing else, this story represents a small gesture of gratitude 20 years overdue. Even after 2 decades, I can close my eyes and return to that porch at the Tip Top Lodge. I can see the old guy staring at me. Elroy Burdall, 81 years old, skinny and shrunken and mostly bald. He wore a flannel shirt and brown work pants. In one hand, I remember, he carried a green apple, a small paring knife in the other. His eyes had the bluish-gray color of a razor blade, the same polished shine. And as he peered up at me, I felt a strange sharpness, almost painful, a cutting sensation, as if his gaze were somehow slicing me open. In part, no doubt, it was my own sense of guilt, but even so, I'm absolutely certain that the old man took one look and went right to the heart of things, a kid in trouble. When I asked for a room, Elroy made a little clicking sound with his tongue. He nodded, led me out to one of the cabins, and dropped a key in my hand. I remember smiling at him. I also remember wishing I hadn't. The old man shook his head as if to tell me it wasn't worth the bother.
"Dinner at 5:30, he said. "You eat fish?"
"Anything," I said. Elroy grunted and said,
"I'll bet.